Hello and welcome to Arts Express here on CITR 101.9. I'm your host, Katie Fitzpatrick. Now, today's show is all about the PUSH Festival, which has started on January 16th and is running to February 3rd here in Vancouver. And there's tons of great shows going on related to that. So I'm going to be doing a review of Frankenstein, and I'm also going to have a review of Old Goryeo and the Four Horsemen by arts volunteer Tracy Fuller. And here in the studio live with me right now, I have Michael Scholar Jr., who's the lead actor, plays the devil in The Black Rider. And he's also the artistic director of November Theater, is that right?
That's right.
And so we're going to be talking to him about all of that, but we're going to be doing that in just a little while. First of all, we're going to give you guys some listings of some events that are going on in the PUSH Festival, and we're going to do one of our reviews from Tracy Fuller before we talk to Michael here. So one of the events that's going on in the PUSH Festival right now is Oot, Un Rai Pa La Campagne. Please excuse my pronunciation if it's no good. So that's a production of La Manufacture Production, presented in association with Théâtre Le 16e, and it's on from January 23rd to 26th at the Waterfront Theatre. The description of it is, late in the afternoon, on a blistering, languid summer day in the countryside, four generations of a family living together engage in the hectic preparations for an upcoming engagement party. Eight Chekhov-inspired characters confront each other in a series of symbolic oppositions: youth versus old age, city versus countryside, old versus new world. Another event currently on at the PUSH Festival is Clark and I Somewhere in Connecticut. Now, this is an interesting background story to it. In the summer of 2005, actor-writer James Long salvaged a collection of seven photo albums and travel journals from an alley near his East Vancouver home. The collection, complete with detailed captions and letters, documents a family's history between 1950 and 1987 and includes everything from birth notices to a full eulogy for the archivist Pomeranian. Now, that's on from January 30th and February 2nd. It's a production just trying to make sense of these things that James Long found, and it's showing at Performance Works. A dance event going on with the PUSH Festival is called Dances for a Small Stage. Mix fabulous contemporary dance, a rough and tumble Vancouver Legion, and one ridiculously small stage, and find yourself at Dances for a Small Stage. That's January 31st to February 1st at, as you probably guessed it, the Legion on the Drive. Another dance event going on is Fever. Celebrating its 10th anniversary in 2008, Fever is a collaboration between English dancer and actor Nigel Charnock and German composer and clarinet saxophone player Michael Reisler. That's January 24th to 26th at the Scotiabank Dance Center. Now, one of the events that is getting probably the biggest buzz at the PUSH Festival, it's all over all their advertisements and pamphlets if you've come across any of those, is Haircuts by Children, something that started in Toronto with a group called Mammalian Diving Reflex, co-presented with the Grunt Gallery. Now, following successful runs in Los Angeles, Toronto, and Birmingham, Haircuts by Children invites you to take part in an event that will test your courage and faith in the future. Surrender your preconceptions and your scalp to the aesthetic choices of these mini barbers, a whimsical piece that plays with the enfranchisement of children and the level of trust we afford them, creating a dialogue between groups not used to such reversal of power, especially one in which our vanity is put to the test. Now, I saw some photos and videos of this when I went to see Frankenstein. They had an exhibit on of it, and it's really quite interesting seeing what choices the kids make. There's a lot of silly hair dye going on, but has some interesting aspects to it as well. And that's January 26th and 27th at New News Salon and Spa. Now, one last thing that I'll mention here is one that we're going to have a review of probably for next week's art show. It's called Hey Girl. The stage is enveloped in fog as slow music surrounds the audience. A gelatinous substance softly falls from a table to the floor. Then, little by little, as if shedding a skin, the naked body of a young woman emerges. She will face many challenges as a newborn. She will need to harden herself and form a protective shell. Half Joan of Arc, half Juliet, she'll be torn between the desire to fight for her freedom and powerlessness that condemns her to wait to be saved. That's on at the Frederick Wood Theatre here on campus at UBC, and it's January 23rd to 26th. Now, before we talk here with Michael, we're going to hear a review of The Four Horsemen by arts volunteer Tracy Fuller.
If you saw a sign advertising the Four Horsemen project, what would you think it was for? Would you imagine a Western frontier and a 10-gallon hat? Or perhaps four apocalyptic wraiths riding across the Georgia Strait? Would anyone have thought of the 1970s Sound Poetry Performance Collective, who were once famous across Canada and in Europe? The four men who stressed that it was the sound of language that was the core of their creative work, and whose deconstruction and reanimation of language and literary forms changed the way many Canadians understood language and poetry? The names B.P. Nichol, Steve McCaffrey, Raphael Barrett Riviera, and Paul Dutton hold little cultural currency these days, although they were once considered Canada's preeminent poetic innovators. Their Four Horsemen project began over 30 years ago, and through Vancouver's fourth annual PUSH Festival for the Performing Arts, their abstract vocalizations have been revived on stage under the direction of Kate Alton and Ross Manson. On stage, we see four dancers who embody and project and respond to and sing and say and feel the words and works of the original Four Horsemen. Their vignettes are playful and captivating, interspersed with documentary video footage and explanatory narration of what exactly these men were trying to do. The poetry they present is in their body and in their sound. They play with the audience. We are both witness to and participants in their unique poetic experience. Presented at the Scotiabank Dance Center this weekend, they take the words we use every day and make them strange. For example, imagine what love looks like. What does love sound like? If you had to draw a picture of love or make a sound or move in the way that is love, what would you do? For the Four Horsemen Project, love is a lonely begonia wandering into a blossoming flower garden that is filled with ukulele music and singing. It is an acrobatic meeting, half naked with a raspberry to your neck while you're floating and falling and pushing and pulling in sound and in time. The Four Horsemen Project was conceived and directed by Kate Alton and Ross Manson with the help of CBC Radio's Stuart McLean. It played at the Push Festival for Performing Arts this past weekend, and it is heading to Gananoque and Dublin and Edinburgh later this year. For the Arts Report, I'm Tracy Fuller.
All right, so that was the review of The Four Horsemen from Tracy Fuller. As always, a very poetic and interesting review. Now we're back again with, as I mentioned, Michael Scholar. Hi, Michael.
Hi, how's it going?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm kind of crazy.
You're kind of crazy?
Yeah.
I guess you got a bunch of shows, right?
So yeah, performing and producing, and there's always family issues that come creeping in when you're
right.
at your most busiest. So, but we won't talk about that. We'll
okay.
talk about the fun stuff.
Yeah, no worries. Now, you want to tell us a little bit about your company, November Theatre?
Yeah, November Theatre was a company that started back in 1998 in Edmonton, Alberta. We came together to produce the world English premiere of The Black Rider, this rock opera by Tom Waits, William S. Burroughs, the beat poet, and the great opera avant-garde director Robert Wilson. So we came together to create the world English premiere of it and work in kind of a heightened performance style using movement and a very unique aesthetic that's expressionistic. And we haven't produced any other shows but The Black Rider.
Wow.
Because we've been touring it around for the last 10 years. And
oh
we're getting
God.
We're getting close to the end of its life, though. I think after the run in Vancouver, we may just take it to Toronto and finally shoot it in the head. And we hope to produce other projects in a similar vein.
Right. Wow, that must be crazy doing the same show for 10 years.
Yeah, actually, we just found out. We did some calculations. Tomorrow night, Wednesday night, is our 100th show.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty
That's
cool.
amazing.
It is for theater. I mean, usually you work for a couple months, and you run the show for 10 days, and that's the extent of
right.
its life. But we've gotten a lucky chance here to reinvestigate it year after year, to let it grow, to let it breathe, to let it evolve. And we're very lucky. I mean, the company
And they have time between shows as well.
Yeah, it's not
like you're on Broadway
straight.
Where you're going every night or something like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Yeah. Otherwise, we'd probably be up to like 10,000 shows or something
yeah.
by now. But no, we're we did it for a couple summers in 98 and 99, and then in 2000. We did it on the Fringe circuit then. Then we did a four-month tour, 2004, 2005. The summer again in 2006, we took it out to St. John's, and here we are doing it for a month at the Arts Club Theatre with the Push Festival.
It's well, really it's amazing cool. some of the precision in the show. Like, I don't know, you have that little stand that you kind of come up and off of that's all, you know, a little acrobatic every once in a while, and I guess yeah. you got 10 years to perfect that kind of stuff. It must come so easy now doing that kind of stuff.
I don't know if it's easier. It actually gets a little harder. I mean, when I was first doing the show, I was 21. Now I'm 31, so I'm not as sleek as I once was.
Right,
I'm
okay.
not as flexible as I once was. But after a few weeks of rehearsals and a few cranks in the neck and a few sore, stiff muscles, you eventually find the muscle memory is still there. Like, you never forget it. It's like a language. Like, you were saying that you took French immersion
right.
at high school. And if you go back to Montreal or you go to France and you get submerged in it, all of a sudden that stuff will find itself emerging to the surface.
Right.
And it happens with this show. It's really in my bones. So
wow.
we come back and reinvestigate it. We get back into rehearsals and I go, oh yeah, I know this. I can sing this, right? I can move here and it's all in there.
Well, I when I was a kid, like, I liked acting and stuff, and I did all through high school and everything, and I always thought it's so much more interesting to play, like, the evil character than the good character. I remember when I was little, I saw a production of, like, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, and I was like, oh, I want to play the White Witch one day. That'd be so great, right? Okay. And so, obviously, you've been playing, like, Satan for, like, 10 years, and
yeah.
you're saying it's in your bones, you know? What is that like?
Well, the devil is definitely in my bones, and I think it's wonderful because the devil gets all the good songs. It is fun
yeah.
to play the evil character. He gets all the good lines. He gets all the good angles in those dark movies, but in this show, I have these fantastic songs to sing, and I really sympathize with this devil. I mean, I don't think he's really evil. I just think he likes to be entertained, and what entertains him is when other people hang themselves. You give him enough rope, and you watch them hang themselves.
That's a little evil, I would say.
You think?
But I guess it's the person's fault, is what you're saying, for falling into
that trap,
right?
Exactly, and the devil's bored. I mean, he's been sent down to hell, and he's been castized out of God's supreme presence, so he's got to create some entertainment for himself, and so all he does is hand out some magic bullets that always hit their mark, and he watches what insanity ensues.
Have you read Faust?
I have, of course, yes.
Yeah, so how do you compare? I mean, I read it this... Well, I only read part one, but I read it this year in a literature class. So how do you kind of sympathize with the devil in that story as well?
Well, I don't know if they're the same devil,
yeah.
but there's a real similarity between the stories. This is we constantly call this tale a Faustian tale because it really is about a man who makes a deal with the devil to further himself along. In Faust, of course, he's greedy. He wants fame, he wants fortune, he wants money, he wants sex. And in ours, the poor little innocent, silly little clerk Willem, he wants to marry his true love Kachin. And the only way he can marry her is if he proves to be a worthy hunter. So he needs these magic bullets, but he doesn't decide to practice and become a good hunter. He decides to take the easy road and make a deal with the peg leg man who gives him these magic bullets.
So the Satan's more a facilitator than he causes anything, right?
Satan is a facilitator. That is exactly it. I'm going to get it printed on my business card. Satan is a facilitator. He's also a great... He's a great salesman, too. I mean, that's all he is. He's selling these bullets. Hey, the first one's always free.
Yeah.
You want one? And the silly little innocent.
And I guess God's a facilitator in a way, too, if you think of it that way. Like, I mean, people always say, well, why is there evil in the world if God is good, you know?
Well, God is selling one thing and the devil's selling another. And sometimes...
But both are giving us choice, right?
Exactly. And we have the choice.
Yeah.
And that's what this story is about. It's about the choices we make.
Now, this show is, it obviously deals a lot with death. Mm-hmm. And I like the part where the guy says, well, you can't slap a happy ending on a story about death or whatever, right? In the show, it's great. So, these sorts of things that are so tragic and dark, how do you think, like, for the audience coming and watching this show, how does it sort of, like, benefit them? What do they walk away with?
Well, I think it's necessary that we face the ugly truths in the world, and then we can make our decisions. I mean, the whole operetta is based on a German folktale called Der Freischütz.
Okay.
And Der Freischütz is also the folk story that Carl Maria von Weber's opera Der Freischütz is based. And that's a huge opera. If you're an opera fan, you know the opera Der Freischütz. So it's the same story about the man who goes down to the crossroads and molds the devil's bullets so he can become the hunter. But when Carl Maria von Weber did his opera, romantic opera in the mid-1800s, he hung a happy ending on it. Deus Ex Machina comes in, saves the day, the girl lives, everybody's happy, the evil get punished and the good get rewarded.
So Satan doesn't win in the end,
No, not in that version. So it kind of undercuts it. And as Burroughs is saying in that speech you're talking about, he who hangs happy ending on story about death shall likewise take a hangman's rope. It's really saying, don't sell us out. Don't sell out your readers. Don't sell out your audience. Don't sell out your artistic vision to make things accessible. People can take the hard truths, and then they can walk away and make their own decisions. Because that's life. People do die, and people do make dumb decisions, and people do sell their souls to the devil a little at a time. And this is us facing that reality.
And the evil don't always lose.
No.
So.
Evil win, evil loses. It's push and pull. And this is one story about one man who made a really dumb decision and or even a few people who made a stupid decisions. And we can learn from that. We don't have to show rosy, happy endings. We can just show the truth as it is.
Now, another thing I'm wondering about, I just read this essay last night for an English class again, and I think it sort of applies in a way. It was talking about how in early Canada, I think everywhere pretty much, but it was talking about Canada, the novel was really rejected because it was like, you're wandering off into this fantasy world, and like, you're going to sympathize with characters that are evil, and how are you, that's not going to help your education. So it was saying you should rely on realistic stuff. And then authors came out with books that were realistic, but they were critical and gritty and psychological, and people were like, oh, well, this is no good either. And then they said, well, fantasy's okay because it's not really real and it's okay to read it by the fire, but you shouldn't take it too seriously kind of thing anyway. And obviously this time these more realistic novels were coming out, more realistic theater was coming out as well. And now this is something that's very fantastic. So how do you think that the fantasy and the realism, like what in theater, what do you think is sort of stronger, or do you think they're both the same?
Well, I think that's one of the great benefits of theater, and that's one of the wonderful attributes of theater, that you can sometimes get on TV and film, but TV and film does realism really well. You know, nobody does realism better than TV and film. You point a camera at the kitchen sink, and mom's doing the dishes, and dad's having a fight over her shoulder, and we get that gritty realism.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't go to the theater to watch TV on the stage.
I was actually going to say the same thing, and yeah. I was like wondering if it was going to be kind of offensive, but no. Yeah, it's kind of the same. Yeah, the theater has so many different outlets it can take, you know, it kind of might as well.
Yeah, and you got to use the attributes. I mean, that's the style of theater I enjoy seeing the most. It's the kind of theater I enjoy creating the most. Of course, there is a lot of people out there that, you know, want to do their productions of On Golden Pond or Importance of Being Earnest, whatever the realistic dramas are. Well, Earnest isn't terribly realistic, but anyway, I think there's another world, another fantasy level, as you said, another style in which we can tell stories through our bodies, through time and space, through abstractions that engages your audience on another level. And Robert Wilson, who originally directed this, I mean, our production's directed by Ron Jenkins, the genius director from Edmonton, but Robert Wilson, who originally created it with Waits and Burroughs, he plays a lot with time and space. His production of Black Rider is about 3 hours long, and that's a short opera for him. He has 8-hour operas, 48-hour long operas. They're crazy, these insane pieces where a man will cross a stage on a bicycle, and it'll take him 10 minutes, maybe 30 minutes to cross the stage, or he'll walk slowly and disappear into a frog's mouth. I know he uses surrealistic ideas and dreamlike imagery to engage us in a different way, because we're used to engaging our art in a really easy way, and when we recognize realism, when we see realism, we can digest it and we know where to compartmentalize it. But when your brain gets grabbed and stretched out and pulled this way and that way, and you start to feel something on more than one level, on these kinesthetic levels and on these dreamlike levels, I think you walk away with a spiritual experience, more satisfying experience, a fuller experience of what the theater can really do.
Yeah, I know. I feel sometimes too that like, if I'm going to go see something, if I have, you know, song and I have dance and I have movement and I have costume design and set design that are really artistic, and then you get so much more, like, kind of contribution. Like, so many more people are commenting on what's happening. If it's sort of realistic, you know, there can be a great, really, really great script and really great acting and directing, but some of those other aspects are missing because, you know, the couch is a couch. It's not going to be a statement on anything. Whereas, you know, in The Black Rider, everything, all the aesthetic elements, you know, were
really heightened.
Adding to something,
And then it's really integrated. I mean, we've got this very dynamic lighting design that Michael Cruz gave us that's kind of like another character in the show, you know. And we've got white face and these stylized set pieces. And I just, when I go to see a movie in a movie theater, the only kind I really like to see are the big epic ones. I don't want to see two people talking about their love relationship. I don't need to see big talking heads. I want to see, like, blood and guts and huge sweeping landscapes.
I don't know if I agree with you on that one, but
I can rent those movies. I watch them at home, right? I don't need to see an episode of Friends on the big screen, right?
Right,
I go to the movie theater to see big, epic, fantastic movies, and I go to the theater to be engaged on many levels, and I watch TV.
So what everything does best is what you want to see, you know?
That's me.
The big screen does the epic best, you know? Yeah. The theater does the kind of multimedia type package best.
And, yeah.
Well, no, that's good. Now, I'm wondering, does it make a difference, like, being in the part of the Push Festival now? What does that mean to you, kind of?
Well, the Push Festival is a fantastic place for us to be. I mean, we first played the Push Festival 2 years ago in 2005, and we sold out when we ran for a week then. So it was wonderful that they invited us back. And the Push Festival seems to do something that no other theater in this city can do. And they're getting audiences out to see theater. It's really hard to get people to come see theater in this town. I don't know what it is. You're fighting against the beautiful scenery. People have their own very busy lives, but theater hasn't really gotten integrated as a part of everyone's life. But in January, when the Push Festival comes, everyone, like, throws aside whatever they're doing, and they're like, we're going to see some crazy dance piece or a music piece or a theater piece. And Push Festival gets these people that don't normally go see theater to come see a whole schwack of theater. So it's really wonderful for us. They're kind of counterculturalists. They're alternative. They're challenging, doing new and exciting stuff. And
high profile enough, too, that people that wouldn't normally see that kind of thing, I think come out and
definitely
see that.
Oh yeah, and Norman Armour, the executive director, he's a fantastic curator. He goes around the world and he sees the world's best stuff, and he programs what he likes and what he thinks Vancouverites would like. So to be included in that is fantastic for us. But it's also a huge compliment for us playing at the Arts Club. I mean, the Arts Club Theater is, you know, the theater in this city that does such a wide range of stuff. They do new and challenging works, and they also do the tried and true classics and big musicals. So yeah. they program a wide range of stuff, and for us to be included in their season is a real honor for us.
I saw my ex-boyfriend's stepdad's mom and her boyfriend.
Wait, say that again.
My ex-boyfriend's stepdad's mom.
So is that your ex-boyfriend's step-grandmother?
Yeah, okay. So I saw her and, like, her boyfriend, or I don't even know what he is, but they were there because they have season tickets to the arts club. And it was, I just thought it interesting because I don't think they would ever, if it wasn't showing at the arts club, come out to see, like, a rock opera, this kind of thing, but they have these season tickets, and so it's kind of interesting to see, you know, I didn't get a chance to talk to them, but to see something that they totally wouldn't see otherwise, I imagine. So.
Yeah, it's a really interesting mix of people that come. I mean, we get the arts club subscribers who have been going to see arts club shows for years. We get these young, you know, rock and rollers that don't even go to theater who are coming to see Tom Waits do his thing or see the Tom Waits musical, as it were. And they mix and they all get it. They all get it on a different level, right? People who have seen a lot of theater, they understand the kind of cabaret, Kurt Vile, Bertolt Brecht thing we're doing. The rock and rollers are like, whoa, what is this thing all about? This is exciting. And we can get some literary folks who want to see Burroughs' text and the odd opera folk who knows who Robert Wilson is.
Right.
And they all mix and we have this very eclectic, strange audience that gets a ride unlike any other piece.
Now, we're going to have to wrap up our interview here, but we're going to play something from Tom Waits' The Black Rider. So, do you want to introduce this song for us?
Yeah, this song we're going to listen to is just called The Black Rider, and it's basically, I sing it in the play, but Tom Waits sings it here, and it's the show barker, the devil, inviting everyone to come on in and have a good time.
Great. Well, thanks so much for talking to us, and we'll go to this, and then after that, we'll be back for one more review here at Arts Express.
Thanks, Katie.
I'll drink your blood.
All right, so that's the song The Black Rider from the album The Black Rider by Tom Waits, which is obviously a big part of this. Well, that song itself is actually in the play The Black Rider, which I had a chance to check out last week on Wednesday. It's a fantastic show, and if you were tuning in earlier, we were just talking to Michael Scholar Jr., the lead actor who plays Satan in this production, and also the artistic producer of November Theater, which has been doing this show for a shocking 10 years. Now, before we go today, I just want to talk to you guys about a couple more shows that are on at the Bush Festival. One of them is Old Goryeo, which we're going to be listening to another review by Tracy Fuller for that before we go into Robert's Reel to Reel. But another one that I just want to mention briefly is Frankenstein, which I had a chance to check out on Sunday. Now, it's a pretty daunting task, basically. Someone took a classic by Mary Shelley, converted it into a musical, all in rhyming verse, that was sort of going to be understandable for the modern age. And what was great about this was it didn't modernize it. It didn't put it in, like, our times, which I generally hate to see in a production. What it did was it modernized it enough for us to understand it and give it a universal meaning. And that the songs were great, the rhyme was great. It gave it a whole sort of mood that was fairy tale-ish, but it's still very dark. And in that way, it sort of had a sort of similar aesthetic as The Black Rider. Now, it was full of all kinds of interesting themes. Now, some of them were sort of specific to Mary Shelley and the romantics, dealing with, you know, our childhood innocence and our fear of the sciences. But a lot of them were much more universal, you know, being careful what you wish for and being aware of sort of the what we think is horror in our society, but maybe if we took a little more time to look at it and explore it, we would realize that that is not quite what it is. Now, it also deals with having to meet our responsibilities, and it looks into how misery and loneliness and being orphaned can turn us evil. Now, it has great acting, great singing, set and costume design. It has an eerie, sort of clinical, morbid, white aesthetic to it, and overall I would just say an impressive adaptation that leaves the audience with lots to think about. It's currently on at the Vancouver East Cultural Center, which always has some really great productions. And now before we go today, we're going to go to our review of Old Goryeo by Tracy Fuller, once again doing a second review for us today. I hope you all get a chance to go check out some events in the Arts Club, Push Festival. You can find more information about it at www.pushfestival.ca. And tune in next week. We're going to be talking about the Storytelling Festival that's coming up, and we're going to be interviewing a storyteller and the artistic director of that show. Once again, for Arts Express here on CITR 101.9, I'm Katie Fitzpatrick.
The 5th annual PUSH International Performing Arts Festival arrived in Vancouver last week, promising 19 days of groundbreaking theater, dance, music, and various hybrid forms of performance art from afar and just around the corner. With venues located across the city, two of the festival's 24 performances are playing on campus at UBC this week. The first is an adaptation of Balzac's landmark 19th century novel, Old Goryeo, a key novel within the author's Comédie Humaine, a multi-volume fictional portrait of French society during and after the French Revolution. It's an old story, says Madame Vauquet, the mistress of the boarding house that gathers Goryeo's cast of characters. It happens all the time, she says. Old Goryeo jaunts deftly through a mess of stories that have been adapted to the stage and directed by James Fagan Tate. Although 18 actors and 3 musicians appear on stage, the play focuses on the lives of 3 men. Monsieur Goryeo, played with tragic finesse by Richard Newman, is a man we pity and fear because of who he is and who we may be. His blind devotion to his daughters ruins him, and yet the ungrateful wenches remain Goryeo's sole source of happiness. Blinded by the idea of bonheur, the old man enjoys none of it himself. Eugène de Rastignac, a naive young man from the south of France, played by UBC's Spencer Atkinson, arrives in Paris naive and hungry to seek his fortune, fall in love, and experience the complications of life. Although Rastignac's romantic affairs cause him an adequate amount of trouble, it is his liaison with the dubious Monsieur Vautrin, played to perfection by David McKay, which opens the young man's eyes and maligns his impoverished virtue. Although the play is well acted and expertly staged, it isn't particularly groundbreaking. It is excellent, but considering the PUSH Festival's mandate for provocative new pieces, this reinvention of Balzac could have pushed its boundaries a bit further. Although the live accompaniment, which is provided on stage by 3 musicians, does unify the tone and transition within the piece, and makes sounds for the props and set pieces that do not physically appear on stage. That being said, Old Goryeo is still an excellent play, worthy of sold-out seats and standing ovations. If the UBC Theatre Department can maintain this high standard that it is showcasing as part of this week's PUSH Festival, aspiring audience members will be lining up in droves for tickets to the rest of the 2008 season. Old Goryeo will play as part of the PUSH International Festival for Performing Arts at the Chan Center's TELUS Theatre until January 26th. Tickets are available at the Chan Center box office. For the Arts Report, I'm Tracy Fuller.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Reel to Reel at the Movies. Robert Waldman back in action. Lots of brand new movies to talk about today, plus a number of holdovers, plus a number of movies that recently won the Golden Globe Awards. What, if you can call that a ceremony? My, wasn't that awful? Just a typical press conference with a bunch of Hollywood celebrity reporters. Hey, why don't they have anybody from British Columbia calling the shots? Let's hope that the Oscars are a little bit better and a touch above what transpired at the Golden Globes. But the Golden Globes, for your information, if you're not familiar, the Golden Globes are the foreign Hollywood press, film critics, I guess, from foreign newspapers around the world that belong to this association that rate the best films of the year. And there were really not too many surprises, although Atonement edged out many of the other top-caliber films for best Oscar-nominated or best Golden Globe nominations for best picture of the year. Let's talk, however, about some movies that are currently playing in Vancouver, that are on their way, or that are holed over. Now, do you like limited engagement runs? Because our first film today is probably only going to be here for 1 week. And I think if you like horse racing, if you like sports, if you like movies, if you like Canadian films, you're probably going to get a boot out of All Hat. That's right, the movie is called All Hat. And I found the movie rather appealing. It's set in Southern California, in horse territory, and it's all about the story of a rich thoroughbred racehorse owner, a young man who decides to go into real estate, and being in real estate, as we all know, property is worth a lot of money. So this young man decides to buy up farmland, and wouldn't you know it, that causes a bit of friction among the local village community. They don't like some rich boy trying to buy out everything, and he's a little bit on the greedy side. Also in the mix is a convict, or should I say a foreign convict, who returns home to the farmland, farm territory, who we learn later on has had a run-in of sorts with this rich socialite business tycoon. And naturally, there's a woman involved. The woman, by the way, is played by Lisa Ray. What I liked about All Hat is the way it showed the behind-the-scenes workings of a racetrack and the thoroughbred industry and the horse community.